welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am your host, Pat Johnston. And tell me if these numbers surprise you, okay? According to a recent Reuters-Ipsos poll, 69% of America says that the Epstein files show that powerful people in the U.S. are rarely held accountable for their actions. 53% said the Epstein files have lowered their trust in the country's political and business leaders. And 75% think the United States government is still hiding information about the alleged clients of Epstein who pleaded guilty in 2008 to charges, including soliciting prostitution from a minor. And then there's this from NPR Stephen Fowler. And I quote, "The Justice Department has withheld some Epstein files related to allegations that President Trump sexually abused a minor, an NPR investigation finds. It also removed some documents from the public database where accusations against Jeffrey Epstein also mention Trump. Some files have not been made public despite a law mandating their release, and these include what appear to be more than 50 pages of FBI interviews as well as notes from conversations with a woman who accused Trump of sexual abuse decades ago when she was a minor." Oh, now come on. Who would really believe that Trump would be guilty of any kind of sexual abuse? Oh, yeah, that's right. Look, I don't know about you, but I think that's, you know, kind of a big deal considering this guy is in the White House enriching his buddies and the Epstein class while working class Americans struggle under his so-called policies. And he's maybe getting us into a war with Iran to please his Israeli friends. So I don't know. Just spitballing here, but maybe we should kind of, you know, look into this. Insanity, I know. Same with how we learned that days before Dear Leader Trump announced that the opening of the publicly owned Gordie Howe Bridge from Detroit to Canada had to be delayed until he could suddenly renegotiate a trade deal with Canada, we learned that the family who owns the Ambassador Bridge that also connects Detroit to Canada, a privately owned bridge, made a $1 million bribe to MAGA Incorporated, and that's a PAC that supports the Trump regime and its campaign efforts. Oh, I know. A shock. I'm shocked that there's gambling here in this establishment. And wait, now, let me guess, we're not going to get those $2,000 checks from Dear Leader Trump's tariff scheme, are we? I was really hoping we would. Now, I have to tell you, you know what always made me laugh about that stupid scheme, which sadly millions of Americans believed would happen? It's how for years and years and years, when I used to work in right-wing radio, I heard MAGA Republicans and talkers and so-called intellectuals and influencers tell their listeners on how Democrats were the party of handouts. They were the handout party. They were, as I remember Rush Limbaugh saying ad nauseum, the Santa Claus party. But suddenly, Santa Claus was okay, as long as it was dressed up like Dear Leader and he was the one handing out the money. But breaking news, there was never going to be any money for you or I, the working class of America. It was never to be. Last week, the Supreme Court, on a 6-3 ruling, decided that Dear Leader's tariffs under the International Economic Emergency Powers Act were illegal. No, really? Really? Who would have guessed? Not surprised, of course, that Thomas, Alito, and Kavanaugh were the three to give Dear Leader unlimited tariff power, power that's supposed to be under Congress. However, creepy bootlicker Speaker of the House Mike Johnson would never, ever put an end to this, because all Mike Johnson would say is, we must trust in Trump. Now, Jason Sadler, also known as LOL GOP on social media, wrote on his Substack called The Farce that when it comes to Dear Leader, it's about the repetition that matters the most. Facts don't matter. And as Jason says, and I quote here, Trump doesn't lie to be believed. He lies to be repeated. Again, Trump doesn't lie to be believed. He lies to be repeated. See how much more persuasive that becomes just by repetition? I know. It sucks. It really sucks. Well, Jason, it does suck. But as you said, we're always fighting on his terrain, and that means we're fighting in his world. Which is why I didn't participate in that clown show of a State of the Union, because all we learned was how tariffs are great, war with Iran is great, using the ICE Gestapo to terrorize brown and black people is great, the economy is great, the Epstein files are great because he's supposedly exonerated. So it doesn't matter. I just didn't want to participate in that whatsoever. I've only ever really watched, I think, one of his State of the Unions, and that was the first one. Because all that has to be done is just getting the lie out there. As much as it is said and it gets out there and gets reported, even if it gets fact-checked, it doesn't matter. As long as the lie makes it into the political sphere, that's all that matters. I think we used to call that truthiness back in the 2000s. And that's why millions believed it when Dear Leader said countries would pay tariffs, which they don't. And that's why millions believe that they get some kind of $2,000 check from these tariff rebates, which was always interesting because if the consumers weren't paying for the tariffs, then why would they need the $2,000 check? Now, I bet some corporations are going to be looking for some payback, and they will eventually get paid. You can count on it. And I wouldn't hold my breath, though, that FedEx is suddenly just going to give people money for buying their stuff at higher rates. No, that's not going to happen. Do you think these corporations are going to pay back the consumers? It is what it was always meant to be. The people, the working class, paid the tariff tax. Michigan farmers paid a high price, for instance, for Dear Leader's tariff war. As Madison Merrill from the Spartan Newsroom at MSU reported, leading soybean producers from Lenawee, Sanilac, Saginaw, Monroe, and my county of Gratiot County, with large production also in Shiawassee, Huron, Tuscola, and Clinton counties, are feeling the pain from this tariff fight. And as Ms. Merrill's story says, the National Soybean Association estimated a 52% decline in soybean exports due to the trade war, which will cost American farmers almost $100 million every year. And because of that, the U.S. Department of Agriculture implemented a $12 billion Farmer Bridge Assistance Program to help farmers recover some of those tariff-related losses they experienced. However, as she says, soybean growers received less compensation than growers of other commodities such as rice and cotton. From southern states. Meanwhile, Trump went right back to finding new ways to enact tariffs. Dear Leader announced how a global 10% tariff under a provision of the so-called Trade Act of 1974 allows him to unilaterally apply tariffs for up to 150 days. And I'm sure they'll keep finding different and innovative ways to tariff the American people. Interestingly, the Trump regime's ICE Gestapo's terrorizing and disappearing program is hurting economically as well. Now, look, I hate to talk about such an unconstitutional, cruel, and violent program in economic terms, as I feel like that might dehumanize the terror being experienced by so many people in American streets. But that being said, it must be noted how hurting certain areas economically is also part of the regime's strategy here, okay? And that fact cannot be ignored, everyone. Dr. Sheldon Jacobson, a computer science professor in the Granger College of Engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, wrote the following on the economic benefits that undocumented citizens provide in this country. And Dr. Jacobson writes, and I quote here, "The nation's workforce of around 170 million people includes an estimated 8 million undocumented immigrants, led by the construction and hospitality industries. When buildings must be erected or refurbished, the construction industry, valued at more than $2 trillion annually, relies on undocumented immigrants to perform such of the tasks." And Jacobson also notes that once those workers stopped showing up for work because they were fearing for their livelihoods, for their families, then that work won't be completed. And let me remind you of that study from the Institution of Taxation and Economic Policy, which showed that undocumented immigrants paid nearly $100 billion in federal, state, and local tax revenue in 2022, while at the same time, many of them are shut out of the programs their taxes help fund. But, you know, rather than just securing the border and making sure the worst of the worst are deported, the Trump regime wanted to cleanse those they believe to be un-American, who look un-American, who sound un-American, and even worse, those who might not even vote for them, which is strange because Dear Leader actually did get a pretty significant number of the Latino vote. But it doesn't matter. It's about cleansing those they believe to be un-American and then at the same time hurting those areas they deem to be un-American economically. You know, I read this story from the Minnesota Tribune this week on how a 16-year-old asylum seeker from Ecuador was kidnapped by ICE in Minneapolis, and then he was shipped off to a DeVos family-connected Christian youth center in Michigan. That was the story I was not expecting to be reading. And here was the interesting tidbit about this DeVos-connected Christian youth center known as Bethany Christian Services, and this is how the story reads. Bethany Christian Services receives millions of dollars in grants from the federal government, according to a lawsuit the agency filed against the state of Michigan in 2024 to defend its practice of only hiring staffers who ascribe to Bethany's foundational Christian beliefs. The DHS declined to answer how many children from Minnesota have been placed in youth shelters since the start of Operation Metro Surge that was in Minneapolis last month. So long story short, it took this child's family a long time to figure out where the government was holding him. He wasn't allowed to tell them whenever he talked to his family, and his family couldn't ask where he was. Now, they eventually got him back after some time, thanks to good hard work by lawyers. But isn't it refreshing to know that some billionaire family, you know, a family like the DeVos family that's part of the Epstein class, is earning some kind of government money from this government kidnapping program? Isn't that nice? Remember when they tell you that you don't need government help and just to pull yourself up from your own bootstraps? They never play by the same game. And that's why this week it was uplifting to see hundreds of patriots and believers of democracy and working class values show up in cold weather to protest an ICE detention center, better known as a concentration camp, because that's what they should be called, from being built in Romulus, where Metro Detroit Airport is located. Now, this facility was supposed to originally create auto-related jobs, originally. And I'm wondering how much money from Michigan's corporate welfare fund called the SOAR program was spent to originally build this facility, but I digress. Yeah, so hundreds showed up as the Romulus City Council held a public meeting on this ICE concentration camp that could soon be operating in their community. And the Trump regime's Homeland Security did confirm it purchased the building to house around 500 detainees. But good news, the City Council did the right thing and passed a resolution on Monday opposing the establishment, construction, and operation of a new ICE concentration camp. So that's great. And then it was also great seeing Democratic Senate candidates, progressive candidate Abdul Al-Sayed, and also Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow appear at the protest, as well as several other Democrats and progressives as well, including progressive Democrat and Democratic Socialist State Representative Dylan Wagella, who told the crowd how truly sickening that we have a government arguing that this is going to make this community stronger. He's right. And I talked with Representative Dylan Wagella just hours before that protest in Romulus, and you'll get to hear our talk here in just a moment. No, ICE cannot be reformed, and that's why I have zero stomach for establishment corporate Democrat types who are telling us that we just need to go back to the way things were. And let me remind all of you listening, and I'm guessing if you're listening, you don't need much of a reminder, but we, the working class, didn't have the stomach to go back to the way things were. I think you could even go back to like 2008 when Obama won. And then when disappointed by Obama's centrist way of leading, they turned to fascism with Trump. The people are in a populist mood, but they want to know somebody is listening to them. The sad part is they turned to Trump thinking that he was actually hearing them when he was never hearing them. So when Democrats picked Michigan centrist Democrat and pro-cryptocurrency girl Alyssa Slotkin to give the rebuttal to Dear Leader's State of the Union last year, that was their way of saying, hey, this safe former CIA operative is just what the people want to hear. I don't need to remind everyone of that disaster last year. So, the Democrats learned their lesson and perhaps consider having New York Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who brought excitement and brought new voters to the party, as a possible rebuttal speaker to this year's State of the Union address? No, they went with Abigail Spanberger, governor of Virginia, who also worked in the CIA. Back to back. Brilliant! Now, look, I'm not saying Spanberger gave a bad speech, but the people want change. The working class is demanding more. You think what you're seeing in Romulus is a working class that is about norms? You think that's a working class that says, hey, let's just take everything back to where it used to be? You think the people you're seeing protesting across the state and across the country are about saving old institutions? I mean, that gave us the Epstein class? Are you serious? Old institutions failed the working class, and these established corporate Democrats are telling you that we simply need to go back. Now, not to sound like George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life, but back to what? I'm out of time, but we need a true working class party again. And it's obvious that the Democratic Socialists and the Progressives are the ones bringing the ideas and bringing the energy. And that's why they're winning elections. Coming up, Michigan State Representative and Democratic Socialist Dylan Wagella will join us here in just a moment. You're listening to LOL.
Bringing progressivism with passion each and every week. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And subscribe to us on YouTube. We'd also like to thank Audio Boom for publishing the show and helping us spread our populist, progressive, and patriotic message. Speaking of which, let's get back to the show with Pat.
Left of Lansing is now on Patreon. You can get the entire show catalog there as I'm posting other things and thoughts on Patreon that you can't get just on the podcast. So subscribe there and help spread the progressive message across Michigan and the nation. Okay, it is nice to get a chance to catch back up here with Progressive Democratic State Representative Dylan Wagella from the 26th House District, which comprises of like Romulus, Garden City, Westland. And his district, by the way, does contain over 90,000 constituents, a lot of people there. And Representative Wagella has been busy on the data center front, on the ICE front, on the immigration battle, on the battle for the working class in his district, as always. So, Representative Wagella, thanks so much for coming back to talk with us here on Michigan's Premier Progressive Podcast. I appreciate it.
Happy to be back. It's been, as we were saying, like about a year or so, but glad to be back on, and thanks for always covering what's going on.
Of course, of course. Well, let's talk about your reelection launch that you held last weekend. And judging from the pics that I saw on your social media, seems like the crowd there was fired up.
Yeah, honestly, blown away by the support. And I honestly, just being frank, this last year has been pretty rough in this country, as everyone knows, and being an elected official has not been easy. But having 200 plus people come out to support and say, hey, keep going, it was really important to me. And I think it's important. And it shows that people are really sick and tired of politics as usual. You know, I'm an open democratic socialist. I have been my entire life, essentially. And I think people are starting to realize we need to put people in office that are going to represent working class people and not the billionaire class.
If you don't mind, since you just mentioned it, I did notice that you got the backing from like the Detroit Democratic Socialist of America, and you just described yourself as that. I'm going to ask the same question as I ask others who say that they are Democratic Socialists. What do you tell voters, Representative, when they come up to you and are still a little confused about what Democratic Socialism is all about?
Yeah, well, I think a couple things. I think that, you know, most people can identify that there's something deeply wrong with our economy and our democracy, right? You know, I think I just read the other day, 56,000 people have three times as much wealth as half of the globe, which is 4 billion people. Or in this country, three people have more wealth than the bottom half of the country. That isn't right. And, you know, people can't afford their bills. They can't afford their health care. They can't afford their utilities. They don't like what they see what's happening with ICE. And the thing that connects all of those issues, all of those things that people know something is wrong with them, is it's capitalism, right? It's for-profit prisons imprisoning people with ICE. I mean, the Baldwin facility, I think alone, made $254 million. People are making profit off of our healthcare system. They're profiting off of our utilities. These are things that you need to survive. So when people ask me, what does it mean to be a democratic socialist? To me, it means we're trying to fight for an economy that isn't controlled by these for-profit industries, but are controlled by the people, right? So it's making not only workplaces and the economy more democratic, but making our actual political system more democratic and putting those industries back in the hands of the people, which would lower costs, right? You know, Medicare for all and other things. So I think that's what I like to say. I like to say I'm a democratic socialist because I believe everyone deserves the dignity of healthcare, housing, and food in the richest country in the world.
I'm just going to ask you a broad question, and I understand there isn't really much that you could do on a state level, you know, when it comes to the Epstein files and all that. But I don't know if you caught this, but in a recent Reuters Ipsos poll said the following. It showed that 70% of Americans agreed with this statement that the Epstein files show that powerful people in the United States are rarely held accountable for their actions. What do you take from that finding?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that now. I mean, in some places in the world, there's some people are being held accountable for what's being coming out in the Epstein trials. Meanwhile, here in the United States, it seems like the federal government is quite literally blocking the full release of those files. They are actively not investigating. People are not being held accountable. Our president's not being held accountable. Some former presidents are not potentially being held accountable. I think it is one of the most clear examples of the oligarchy that we have, is that if you are wealthy and connected in this country, you don't face the same consequences as somebody else. And I think everyone who has done illegal things with Jeffrey Epstein should be held accountable, and that we have a duty to be making sure that the government is working to hold those people accountable.
Representative, you attended a rally last week in Romulus along with some other prominent Democrats demanding a freeze in expanding immigration and customs enforcement here in the state of Michigan, which includes this possible detention center in Romulus. And according to the story from Michigan Advance, you reportedly called ICE a quote-unquote rogue agency. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, this is an agency that is actively not following the Constitution and is actively violating civil rights. Since October, ICE has lost more than 4,400 times in court already for violating due process and violating the rights of people in our country. That is a huge red flag. 4,400 times is intentional. And I think when we say it's a rogue agency, is that it's only being held accountable by the executive office right now, and they are not holding them accountable at all. Right. Instead, they're defunding healthcare to give ICE more funding. ICE is funded more than most militaries in the world. And I think once people realize that and they see what ICE has been doing, which has been terrorizing our communities, it is very clear that not only do we need to defund ICE, we need to abolish it. And then maybe the most important part in the future, you know, the day, because I believe there will be a day where Trump is gone, we need to prosecute ICE for the crimes that it is committing on the people of our country.
What's your response to those who then would say, well, Representative, if you want to abolish ICE, that means that you don't want any law and order, you don't want the border protected, and you want the worst of the worst being here without being deported, and you just don't want to keep America safe. What's your response to those kinds of arguments?
I'd say ICE is actually making us less safe right now. I mean, I'm 33 years old. ICE hasn't existed my entire life. There have been ways that our country has dealt with immigration throughout the history of this country. And I think we can find ways to do things humanely and find pathways to citizenship. And this certainly isn't it. I think nobody thinks that what's going on is right. I mean, there are industries that are making massive amounts of profits off of what's happening. And we definitely don't want this detention center in Romulus. It's being built in a place that is in the middle of like a residential area. The area is not zoned for this, so hopefully that will help the local government find ways to block this. But across the street, people are living there. Right next to it is a neighborhood. It doesn't make any logical sense for a detention center to be placed there. Let's pretend that there, you know, was a logical place for a detention center to be. We don't want a detention center here because we do not support what ICE is doing. So we're going to do whatever we can to organize and try to stop this detention center from coming here.
Very good. You know, I've read in some places how ICE agents are maybe being paid by the number of people they just arrest. And, you know, I find that kind of alarming, Representative, since it seems like then they'll just arrest anyone to prop up their numbers, which is why you're seeing all these detention centers popping up everywhere.
It's disgusting and horrifying what we're seeing. The only thing that's going to stop it, in my mind, and the only thing that's going to make things better in the long term in this country is a mass movement of the working class, which is why I try to direct people to join the Metro Detroit or just around the country. There's different chapters around the state, the Democratic Socialist of America, because they're doing different organizing on all of these fronts. And I think we need to start putting people into action because, you know, as we've seen, elected officials right now don't have the power in some cases or the spine to actually stand up to this administration.
But you're trying to do at least something. You did introduce the bill, right, that would ban state-owned properties for ICE detention centers. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, we wanted to introduce legislation that would stop the state from selling its property to becoming ICE detention centers and put deed restrictions on state property that it is sold, so that it cannot end up in the hands of private detention centers. So we would love to see that go and move through these chambers. Obviously, it's not going to move because the Republicans control the House right now and seemingly are doing whatever Trump asked them to do.
Are you surprised, Representative Vogela, that you're not seeing one or two or a handful of Republicans join join you in this effort in the state house, especially, you know, back in the day? I mean, I seem to remember they used to be against the federal government coming in and telling local governments what to do. Now that doesn't seem like they care that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is clearly a right side of this issue in this moment in history. And I think a lot of people are failing to meet that moment. And quite frankly, we need some Republicans to wake up on this issue and say, hey, it's not right that people's individual and civil rights are being taken from them. That's not okay. Nobody wants this. And I think more and more people that are not these elected people in Lansing or DC, but more and more people are coming to the conclusion that ICE is not serving the best interests of our communities. So there's some hope there, but we need the people to organize and fight back. And it'll be interesting to see how that happens over the next couple of months.
Do you feel like you've seen people in communities across the state and, you know, in your community and your district, I mean, and obviously what we were seeing in Minneapolis, for instance? Do you think the people were moving faster on this than maybe, I don't know, maybe like national Democratic leadership was?
Absolutely. And I think we're still waiting for Democratic leadership to catch up. I mean, I don't know the exact state of things in DC, but I know there have been conversations about potentially agreeing essentially to give ICE more funding if they get things like more training or body cams. And I think some of that is really silly position for Democrats to have, because the reality is people are already filming ICE. So like, even if they have body cams, I don't know if that stops them from violating rights or doing things very roguely. I think they should wear body cams. Don't hear what I'm not saying. What I'm saying is, though, it's not going to stop the harm. So like, ICE doesn't need to be reformed and the agents don't need more training. They need different jobs. We need to defund ICE and start putting that money in places that actually help this country, healthcare and roads and schools. There's a long list of things that we need for the working class people to start thriving. And this just isn't it. And I think most people agree with that.
Representative, if you don't mind, let's switch it up here to these hyperscale AI data centers in Michigan, because I saw this clip that you posted where you were part of a hearing in Lansing and you asked a quite relevant question regarding these hyperscale data centers. And that question was, since these centers will require extra energy usage, who will get first priority when DTE is working on restoring power after a regional-wide outage? Which we know occurs many, many times, as many Michiganders, especially down around your area, know. So, and then you asked, will it be the residents who would get served first or these data centers? And I think that's a great question, since obviously we, the taxpayers, are helping fund these, I don't know, billionaire tech bro companies through their tax incentives and through tax breaks. And I think we deserve to know that kind of answer, because the problem, Representative, is that we don't really know much, since so much of this is done in secret, which helps explain, I think, why you're seeing working class Michiganders from all across the state are standing up and demanding, hey, can we at least put the brakes on this right now until we can get some more information? I assume that you're getting the same feelings from your constituents.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I've been working on up here, of many, is, you know, I worked across the aisle with State Representative Steve Cara, who's the chair of the Corporate Subsidies and State Investments Oversight Committee. And we got passed about a year ago now bills that would ban state lawmakers from signing non-disclosure agreements. And I know other lawmakers have introduced legislation that would do so at the local level. I think we have to look at it now at the MPSC. But the point is, a lot of these deals are being put together in secret, out of the public eye. And that is just not a way that democracy should be functioning. That only benefits the corporations that are involved in this. And we did get it out of that Republican-controlled House with like 80 plus votes on both bills. And we're having a hard time, if I'm just being honest, getting the Democratic controlled Senate to take the bills up related to the NDA. So I think we need more people in general in Lansing that are going to fight for better transparency all around. But I think most people in Michigan are really worried about the data centers for a couple reasons. The first one is very obvious. They're afraid that their electric rates and their water rates will go up. And I think that's a real concern to have if you just look at any other state that has had a ton of data centers come in here. And it makes sense. Infrastructure costs go up. Someone's going to have to pay that. And even if you write into a bill that that can't happen, I don't think anyone should trust the MPSC not to just give approvals as they just did last week. You know, DT can't maybe come to them and say, hey, raise it because of the data centers, but they can come and ask for it to be raised for other reasons. And they almost always get what they want. And then the other thing is, you know, the massive environmental concerns. But what's not talked about enough, in my opinion, is that we're subsidizing through these tax breaks for the data centers the advancement of AI technology, which is likely going to be very harmful for the working class.
Right. And that Representative actually is a really great point. I know, you know, of course, there's you and there are a few others in Lansing who are speaking up for the working class as to how this new AI boom is going to affect the working class. I think that's one reason why you've got a lot of nervous residents throughout the state, because this is being done in secrecy and they don't know how this is going to affect them. It makes logical sense to me.
And here's the thing. AI is not owned by the public, right? That technology, right now it's actually an economic bubble, which is another concern. You know, 33 years old, as I mentioned earlier, I've already lived through the dot-com bubble and the housing bubble. And then, you know, we had an economic downturn during COVID. So it's getting harder and harder to withstand these different economic bubble bursts, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And with the AI industry, if it's not successful, we're going to see that be harmful to the working class, because the stock market's going to go down, the economy is going to be in trouble for a little bit. But if it is successful, that might even be more harmful, because it's going to be profitable most likely by taking working class jobs or surveillance technology or the military industrial complex. And I'm not saying that there won't be anything positive that comes out of artificial intelligence, but if we don't have regulations in place and we haven't really thought this through, it is really worrisome to me that big tech is going to get a windfall and the working class people are going to be pushed to the side. Because, and this is what I want people to think about, would the billionaires hesitate at all to replace us with robotics and AI, like no. In its entirety at some point? I don't think they would hesitate. And I think their goal is to increase their profits as much as possible. And that's going to leave people that are cashiers and people who work different working class jobs just to the side.
So I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this, since we do know how you voted on this measure. You were against it. But why did it seem to many working class Michiganders that it was imperative amongst the Democratic leadership in Lansing to pass a package of bills granting lavish tax breaks for these tech bro billionaires and their data centers during the final weeks of the lame duck session in 2024? Why did it seem like that was of the utmost importance for the Democratic leadership at that time?
It's a great question. And I know some of us fought against it. I think the first time this bill came up in the House, it was just me and Rep. Lori Podolsky who voted no. And then people started to pay some close attention. And it came back and a lot of people did get to the right vote on this issue. But I think, you know, there's this incredible amount of pressure that was being put on, I think, by several industries, right? This is something that I know that the utilities were a fan of because of how much electricity build out there would be in the long run. If we're just being frank, certain labor unions have been very vocally supported these projects for the construction projects. And then on the other side of the issue, you had environmental groups that were pushing against it. But I think like big tech really, really wanted this. And it was a priority of them and the governor's office. But some of us did fight the good fight. And I think there was a lot of strong arming that went into place and so forth. And I do believe some people regret their vote on this. And I think we're seeing the problems are at play with just the amount of the ability for groups to just kind of put pressure on lawmakers and special interest groups to play a role in some of this stuff. But it was interesting to see the debate play out. I think it's a huge mistake, though. And I think most people in Michigan are coming along to that. If people in office don't start listening to them, I think it'll be made very clear when it comes to election time.
I agree. Now, real quick, though, before we move on, I do want to remind everybody, though, that you have introduced bills in a bipartisan fashion, too, that would repeal these data center tax breaks, right?
Yes. So I worked with State Representative Aaron Burns and Republican Jim DeSena to introduce legislation that would repeal the use and sales tax exemptions on data centers. Additionally, one of the things I think that is hyper related to all of the things that are going on is, you know, I've introduced legislation that would ban monopoly corporations from donating in campaigns if they receive state contracts. So that's the utilities, that's Blue Cross Blue Shield. Those are the biggest players in our politics and are some of the most harmful players. And that has now been turned into a ballot initiative called, you know, Mop Up Michigan, which is Michiganders for Money Out of Politics. And they're collecting signatures right now to try to put that on the ballot because we have been unable to make it move in Lansing due to the dark money. So I think it's really important that we get money out of politics and people start realizing that all of these issues are connected. And what connects them is the economic system we have where profits are put ahead of any other priority.
All right, just two more questions. I want to go back to something you said just a few moments ago when you were talking about how Michigan Democrats have to get on the right side of this issue. And I don't know if you saw this, but I recently shared a story where Washtenaw County Commissioner and current Democratic candidate for Ann Arbor Mayor, Yousef Rabi, said or warned that Michigan Democrats must get on the right side of the hyperscale AI data center expansion fight throughout the state, or else suffer at the ballot box this November. I assume that you would have to agree with that statement from Yousef Rabi.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that we need to be on the right side of this issue, because I've been talking to people and they're very concerned, and we see it. I mean, it's both sides of the aisle. The grassroots, both sides of the aisle, are coming together to organize in partnership and coalition against these in communities across our state. And I think there's good reason for that. And if you look into this issue, I think most people would agree that we're really worried about what AI is going to mean for the working class. What is data centers and what powers AI, and what does that mean for our electric rates and our environment? There are things that are more important than corporate tech profits. And we need to make sure that we're putting people in office that are aware of that and have strong positions on that. And that's not the only issue, but it's one that I think is going to be really important in 26. And I think some of us have been trying to sound that alarm for a little while.
All right. And while I have you here, I recently had Michigan Progressive Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate, Abdul Al-Sayed, here on the show. And I think that you've endorsed his campaign. So what drew you to support his campaign compared to the other candidates who are in the race?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things that we need to look at in a candidate as we move forward in our Democratic primaries. And I think first and foremost, we want to be putting people in office that believe that we should have universal health care and Medicare for all. And that was something that really drew me to his candidacy, as well as we need to make sure we're putting people in office that have never taken corporate PAC money, not just when it's convenient to say so, but throughout their entire time in politics. And lastly, I think one of the most moral issues of our time that we've seen happening, what's been happening in Gaza. And if you don't have the right position on that and are not able to call that what it is, which is a genocide, I think those three things really should be litmus tests for, you know, for the people that we're putting into office. And there's way more to it than that. But I think those are good starters of like, can I trust that this person is going to lead from a place of conscience and values rather than getting up there and making decisions on what is convenient to do to stay in power? And I think there's a lot of really powerful stuff that his campaign has been putting out and kind of connecting these dots for folks. So I'm really excited to see him get elected and to see where things go.
Well, you always stick up for your principles and for your values, and that's why I always love having you on the podcast here. Representative, if people would like to learn more about you and help you out with your reelection, how can they do so?
They can go to DylanWiegela.com. We're still in the process of getting it up to speed. People don't know this about me maybe, but my first campaign was so grassroots. It was a couple friends and a couple volunteers, and I built my website myself. So I'm finally going through and getting some help from people that are a little bit more technically savvy with graphics and stuff with me. So if you go check out the website, you'll be able to see our new look. We got a new logo, but we're also, you know, building out what that policy is going to look like for our reelection campaign and really figure out what the message is here as we continue to talk to folks. But happy to be in this position, happy to keep fighting for the people, and, you know, we'll see what happens. And my message to everybody is you can't rely on people like me. I'm just a guy. You need to go and organize in your community and get in coalition with people that are doing this work, because you could put 5 to 10 of me up in Lansing or people like me, and it would be better, but it wouldn't solve the problems that we're seeing. And we need to make sure that we're creating this mass movement that has the ability to make the real change that we need.
Democratic State Representative Dylan Wiegela, thanks again for being on. And hey, I'd love to have you back on later on this year, if that's okay.
Yeah, anytime. Reach out. We'll try to make it on.
Listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, it's Left of Lansing. Subscribe and give a good review of the show wherever you're listening. You can check out show archives on leftoflansing.com. And if you need more Pat, visit Left of Lansing on YouTube. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
A special thanks to Representative Dylan Wiegela for appearing on the show here this week, and also for appearing at that anti-ICE concentration camp protest in Romulus. Like I said, he sticks by his working class principles and we could for sure use more of that in Lansing. But I did like the last part where he said that he's only one voice in Lansing. And while, yes, we need more voices like his desperately in Lansing, we need an engaged working class even more. Trust me, the millions who've been out protesting and starting real grassroots movements, those are the people we should highlight and that we should publicize. Without them, I'm not sure where we'd be right now. Next week, we'll have one of those strong progressive voices in a red area of the state on the show. Livingston County progressive Casey Helton will join me here, and I'm looking forward to that. Plus, Erica Payne from Patriotic Millionaires will join the show. I had Erica on last year, and her message is plain and simple. Tax the rich. So that's who's on next week. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. Look, I know there have been all kinds of hot takes on the Winter Olympics, and I've given some of my hot takes on the Olympics during the last couple of weeks of the show here. But as a political commentator and observer, and not to mention a big sports fan, I have some things that I've just got to get off my chest, and so I'm going to be selfish and use my platform to get some of these things off my chest. It's no secret at all that MAGA forces have always been hypocrites, you know, when it comes to celebrities, artists, and sports figures sharing their political and social viewpoints. You remember, of course, when MAGA talker Laura Ingraham told players to just shut up and dribble if they're not part of the Republican or MAGA coalition. But then they absolutely love it when celebrities, artists, and sports figures are on their side and spouting off their points of view, like Kid Rock, for instance, who we talked about a couple of weeks ago during the Super Bowl, or Ted Nugent, or Caitlyn Jenner, or Morgan Waller, or Clint Eastwood, or Nicki Minaj, or, of course, Dear Leader Trump. I mean, it's an annual tradition how MAGA will always lose its collective snowflake mind whenever the Oscars are on, or who's playing in the Super Bowl, or when the cartoon green Eminem wore sexy boots instead of tennis shoes. Yes, that was a thing in MAGA land. So I'm sorry, but sometimes I just don't find it really worth my while to get all bent out of shape over every little thing that they're complaining about. But when Dear Leader wrote on his social media at the start of the Winter Olympics in Italy to complain and to attack one of the United States Olympic athletes for not bowing down to him and acting more like a North Korean athlete would behave in public, yeah, it got to me. What I'm talking about, of course, is when Dear Leader Trump attacked Olympic skier Hunter Hess for admitting that, you know, he had some mixed emotions representing the country in the Winter Olympics in Italy. And Hess said during a press conference, and I quote, "There's obviously a lot going on that I'm not the biggest fan of, and I think a lot of people aren't." Yeah, that's true. Then Hunter Hess said that he's representing friends and family who helped him get where he is, and that he'll represent the things that are good in America. And then Hunter Hess concluded by saying, "Just because I'm wearing the flag doesn't mean I represent everything that's going on in the U.S. That seems quite logical to me. Not sure why that got people all up in arms, especially in MAGA land. Now, are we supposed to celebrate the fact that we believe in freedom of thought and freedom of speech, and that's what, you know, separates us from the tyrannical regimes across the world? I thought so, and Hunter Hess is not wrong in pointing out how a lot of working-class Americans are not big fans of the regime's corruption and blatant authoritarian attacks. A CNN poll shows that he's at 36% this week, so Hunter Hess was not alone. But as many of you probably saw for yourselves on social media, many of the MAGA Kool-Aid drinkers reveled. They just reveled when Hunter Hess failed to medal in his event. For instance, MAGA influencer Megyn Kelly tweeted, "Hunter Hess got 10th for his family and for his friends." I thought we were supposed to be all about the red, white, and blue. But no, she wanted to mock Hunter Hess for finishing 10th in the men's halfpipe. But he still made it to the Olympics and is an American. I don't get it. But rather than celebrate his right to free speech and celebrate his achievement in making the Olympics, Megyn Kelly and countless other MAGA influencers took absolute glee that Hunter Hess failed. So much for America. Love it or leave it, right? What happened to always pulling for the good old red, white, and blue? And what happened to you guys being the free speech warriors like you said you were during the Obama and Biden years? Why aren't you out there loving Hunter Hess or gold medal skier Michaela Schifrin for showing the world how we in the United States have a right to speak our minds and to speak against our government? Here was Michaela Schifrin at the Olympics doing just that.
"I'm really hoping to show up and represent my own values of inclusivity, values of diversity and kindness and sharing. tenacity, work ethic, showing up with my team every single day, like I said before, and the values that we bring and put out on the mountain and on the hill every single day. I'm hoping to represent those who have been supporting me this entire time. And I'm really thankful to be here. And my greatest hope for this Olympic Games, from a broader perspective, is that it is a beautiful show of cooperation and of competition.
Now that's patriotism right there, sports fans. You want to talk about publicizing American values? Well, there you have it. But instead, MAGA would rather attack women's figure skater Amber Glenn, who didn't have the greatest of short programs, but then who stormed back with a wonderful free skate to finish in the top six. I mean, that's an achievement right there, finishing top six in the world in figure skating. But no, MAGA couldn't celebrate Amber Glenn. Why? Well, here's what one MAGA influencer on X, who has over a million followers, wrote after Amber Glenn's short program performance. He said, "Team USA skater Amber Glenn trashes America abroad, says Trump is attacking LGBTQ, then lands in 13th place at the Winter Olympics and cries on camera. Maybe focus on skating, not politics." Huh. Again, so much for supporting the good old red, white, and blue, no matter what. But it makes sense because MAGA supports Dear Leader more than they support their country. Kind of like my congressman, John Molinar. Now, let's go to the Olympic hockey teams. The U.S. women's hockey team defeated Canada in a thrilling overtime game for the gold medal thanks to one of the most exciting plays in Olympic hockey history by Farmington Hills' own Megan Keller, who scored the game winner in overtime. I jumped out of my seat here in the studio when I saw that goal happen in real time. And then, 2 days later, for the first time since 1980, the U.S. men's team defeated rival Canada, also in overtime, thanks to a game-winning goal by Jack Hughes of the New Jersey Devils, who also went to high school here in Michigan. Both were terrific moments, and I celebrated both of them as an American and also as a sports fan. Because, you see, I'm not weird. I know the Tkachuk brothers are pro-MAGA, but I still wanted them to help the U.S. win. It's not hard to separate political feelings from cheering for your team. I mean, I wouldn't have any team to cheer for since some players and athletes are MAGA Republicans. Hell, this week I was debating former Michigan offensive lineman Jumbo Elliott on Twitter. I mean, I still think he's a great player, but he's horrific at debating in politics. But that doesn't mean I won't cheer for Michigan anymore. See, you can cheer for your team or for your country, even though you don't agree with their political views. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean we can't criticize those for their beliefs. And that's why I joined so many others who were outraged when they saw the United States men's hockey team celebrating with FBI Director Kash Patel in the locker room. I mean, he says he was there to do business. Well, we still have lots going on with the Epstein files. I don't see him doing much business with those. And you probably have seen the pics of Kash chugging beers in the locker room with Team USA like he was really one of the players, like he really earned that gold medal. Now, that rubbed a good portion of the country the wrong way because Kash, like his dear leader, wanted to make the event all about him. That he attended the game really didn't bother me, other than he went over there on our dime while nothing was being done again on the Epstein file front and many other cases. And yes, I know, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer was at the game, but she didn't make it about herself, other than putting out a video of her at the game. And sure, I'm with you guys out there, some of you critics who say maybe Big Gretch should have been here joining the working class Michiganders who were protesting the ICE concentration camp in Baldwin or the concentration camp protest in Romulus. Yeah, I do believe those are valid criticisms. I kind of wish that she'd be there rather than yucking it up at the Olympics. Still, Big Gretch didn't make it about herself, and she wasn't in the locker room, at least. And then, there was that awful picture with Kash Patel and Detroit Red Wings captain Dylan Larkin celebrating after the game, and that was downright atrocious. Even worse was when video surfaced showing the team gathered around a phone to hear Dear Leader give them congratulations and then invite them to the White House. And then Trump said, "I must tell you, we're going to have to bring the women's team. You know that? I believe I probably would be impeached." As feminist writer Jessica Valenti wrote, in that moment, all but a couple of players yucked it up with Dear Leader and thereby failed their locker room moment. It reminded me of when that tape got released when Trump said he could grab women however he wanted because, you know, he was a star. And the defense of those remarks at that time during the 2016 election was, hey, you can't really get upset about people having locker room humor. Relax, everybody. Lighten up, Francis. Well, here was the same old locker room humor by your dear leader, and most of the USA men's hockey players laughed along with him. USA women's hockey team won gold medal in the exact same fashion, and yet the men laughed with him when he mocked the women's team. Good on the USA women's team for declining the White House's invitation. Good on them. But that moment, to me, it really proved one thing. Sure, it's one thing to be supporting women's hockey in public, but when you feel like you're inside the secret confines of the locker room or the dressing room to, you know, use hockey parlance, that's when you see who people truly are. So the men's hockey team visited the White House and some of the players attended Dear Leader's political rally at the U.S. Capitol, what's also known as the State of the Union. And they all yucked it up with Dear Leader, and they all got pictures, ate McDonald's, and had a grand old time. Now, I've seen many saying things like, hey, the president invited them to the White House to celebrate their accomplishment. Stop worrying about that. Stop being anti-American. Lighten up, Francis. And you know what? In normal circumstances, I'd agree with you. But after the way he mocked the U.S. women's team, you'd still go if you were a player on the men's hockey team? You'd still go after hearing that? Look, I'm a Detroit Red Wings fan, and I like Dylan Larkin as a player, and I'm glad he won gold medal for the United States, but I can't support or celebrate his decision to visit the White House. What the hell was he thinking? Again, this was wrong, not just because of how Trump mocked the women's team, but also because of this. They shook hands with a guy who protects billionaire pedophiles and who has partied with the same billionaire child predators. Not to mention, he's got allegations of sexual abuse against him, and he is a convicted sexual abuser. So, I have to ask some of those hockey players who have children, or especially young girls, would you feel safe leaving your daughter with Dear Leader Trump? Would you really? The aforementioned Jack Hughes, who scored the game-winning goal, said that politics shouldn't be a part of their achievement. And usually I'd agree with that. But by showing up at this White House and attending this Dear Leader's fascist rally at the Capitol building, hey, you became a political pawn. Not every American attended, and that's good. So many others could have followed suit. So many others could have had the guts to do what was right. And you know, maybe that's because some of those players didn't really want to shake the hand of a pedophile protector and a guy who we're now learning had his regime hide more than 50 pages of FBI interviews as well as notes from conversations with a woman who accused Trump of sexual abuse decades ago when she was just a minor, according to NPR. That is disgusting. Why in the world did they go? And let's be honest here, okay? While it was a good win and it made us feel good to see the U.S. men's hockey team finally win gold, it wasn't like the 1980 Miracle on Ice, not even by a long shot. You can't even compare the two. Plus, we didn't even play Russia this time. And another point, I like Canada. It's the regime that decided to make the story about themselves. Why? Because their approval rating is at 36%. It's always about finding ways to divide the working class. I mean, they could have just allowed everyone a chance to celebrate without having to get involved. Kind of like how Dear Leader didn't say much when Michaela Schifrin won her gold medal in skiing, or especially when Alyssa Liu won the figure skating gold medal, becoming the first American woman to win gold since 2002. And I'm so glad for that, because watching Alyssa Liu skate that night will go down, I will say as a sports fan, as one of the most clutch sporting moments in history and one of the greatest sports performances in American history. Plus, her story is awesome. She got here because her dad, who's from China, found a way to escape and raise kids here in the United States. She is the perfect illustration of how immigration helps this country. But many MAGAs would rather see her and her dad terrorized by ICE and disappeared by ICE, and you know that is the truth, which is why Dear Leader didn't have much to say about Alyssa Liu, which is good. She's an American patriot, an American treasure. He doesn't need to talk to her. He doesn't need to contact her. And like progressive writer Joe Roach said on his Substack last week, never have I ever seen a human being so free. Alyssa Liu was the best American to showcase at those Winter Olympics because she loves being herself and she tells everyone else to be themselves. That is what America is supposed to be all about. That is what we're supposed to be celebrating.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Thanks so much for letting me get some of my thoughts on politics and the Olympics off my chest. I needed it big time. And thanks to State Representative Dylan Wagella for being on the show. You can always contact me at leftoflansing@gmail.com or on my socials or on the Left of Lansing YouTube page or on Patreon. Just visit Left of Lansing on Patreon so you can also vote on this week's Left of Lansing poll, which is, do you want Michigan to stop further AI data center development until economic and environmental guidelines are created to protect communities? The poll will be open throughout the week, and then I'll share the results of the poll with you on next week's show. So again, to vote, visit Left of Lansing on Patreon, and I'll provide a link to the poll wherever you're listening as well. Livingston County's Casey Helton and patriotic millionaire's Erica Payne on next week's show. And by the way, next time we talk, it'll be March. Meteorological spring. Woohoo! Hey, we need something to look forward to, right? I mean, other than next week's episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast, of course. Until then, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.